Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing nearly $9 billion in municipal bond assets. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
When you listened to him describe it, you gulped. That's what Senator Charles Schumer said to the New York Times about the late-night words of Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. When you listened to them describe what could happen to the U.S. financial system, you gulped. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Lenovo, makers of ThinkPad and new IdeaPad notebook PCs, dedicating 1% of income, supporting entrepreneurship and social ventures worldwide.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Friday. It is the 19th day of September. Many of us were either in bed or watching Leno and Letterman trying to find the funny in this money morass when congressional leaders held a dramatic meeting on Capitol Hill with the Treasury Secretary and Fed Chairman. At that meeting, yesterday's rumors became fact. The federal government is considering the creation of a new agency that would take onto itself all of the toxic debt that has swamped and overwhelmed the financial system. So, next week could end up being the most expensive week in the history of the U.S. government. Hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money, possibly more. Where exactly would it all go? Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports we won't know until the legislation is in place.
First of all, it's worth noting that Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson thinks this is the cheap option.
I am convinced that this bold approach will cost American families far less than the alternative. A continuing series of financial institution failures and frozen credit markets unable to fund economic expansion.
Paulson says Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will buy more unwanted mortgage-backed securities, but it'll take an act of Congress to get some of the really bad debt off the market. As for how much toxic debt the government will buy, a source at the House Financial Services Committee says it's not yet clear, but everything is on the table. Susan Wachter is a real estate and finance professor at the Wharton School. She says buying up all the bad debt is the only way the scheme will work. Otherwise, she says, home prices will continue to fall, leading to more foreclosures and round and round.
We're in this Mrs. downward spiral. And it isn't as though if you buy up a small portion, 10, 20, 30%, that spiral is going to be stopped.
There's talk the government will buy the debt at auction and at severely discounted prices. But then what, says Wachter?
What happens to these mortgages next? Because if they are all forced to foreclosure, for example, that will cause prices to fall further and will cause the securities themselves' value to be undermined.
That would mean a big loss for the government, which means us taxpayers. Because remember, we're all homeowners now. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Speculation says the final product of this bailout will look something like the Resolution Trust Corporation, or RTC, which bailed us out of the savings and loan crisis in 1989. No matter the final version, as Jeremy noted, we are all now holding that bad debt, or will be. For more on what that means, we turn to a familiar voice, Robert Reich. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, I'm delighted, Tess.
Let's talk first of all about who is at risk as we look at the possibility of an RTC-like agency.
Taxpayers. And we don't know at the risk of how much money, because the RTC, remember, took over the bad debts of hundreds of savings and loan institutions, something in the order of $400 billion, and then resold those assets off so that the American public taxpayers were not stuck with that huge bill, something far less. This time around, though, nobody knows what the bottom is. It could be many multiples of that.
Yeah, I think Senator Richard Shelby went on TV today and actually threw out the T word, trillions.
It's a scary number, and nobody should be alarmed. But at the same time, nobody should underestimate the potential liability on taxpayers.
So what exactly does that mean for us?
Well, it means that if the worst happens and the economy does not recover, or these pieces of paper have very little value because the underlying loans are not going to be repaid, well, that means that taxpayers get left holding the bag, which in turn means that the debt, the federal deficit and the federal debt go much, much higher. And if that happens, then first, we can't do a lot of things that we would like to do as a nation, and foreigners may get a little bit nervous about the faith and credit of the United States, and they may slow down even more than they are already slowing down their willingness to lend us money, and that results potentially in a further drop of the dollar, which means everything we buy from abroad costs more.
I thought this idea that came out today was supposed to make us all feel better.
Well, it certainly made a lot of investors feel better, and maybe it'll work. But you see, Tess, this is the problem. The crisis on Wall Street right now is less about solvency and about capital than it is about trust. Mm. And the real question is, how do you restore trust to a system in which basically nobody trusts the numbers that are supplied by big banks on securities?
Well, let me ask you to answer your own question there, or try. How do you generate that trust? What is the alternative?
Well, the answer is regulation. There's just all sorts of areas that beg for more transparency. And until you get that much transparency, people are just not going to trust what Wall Street is telling them.
Why didn't the government take this sort of radical action earlier?
Well, the kernel of the idea, that is, have a separate agency, take the bad debt off the books of some of these banks, and then resell them, just like the old Resolution Trust Fund. That may make some sense in the short term, but there's no reason the taxpayers have to be involved. You could do this by a kind of reorganization under bankruptcy, a kind of a big Chapter 11 process. You don't have to call it bankruptcy. You could call it a kind of an emergency reorganization of financial institutions, or you could call it liverwurst. Doesn't matter. You just basically eliminate all of the investment value in these banks, all of the focus would be on making creditors as whole as possible.
All right, folks, you heard it here first. Liverwurst is the answer. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you, Tess.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. On Wall Street, they couldn't say it loudly enough, TGIF. Details of the happy end to an historic week when we do the numbers. We've heard a lot this week about how this crisis represents a sea change on Wall Street. Things are going to be different once it all shakes out. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Remember hearing that after the SNL debacle, the dot-com bust, Enron, WorldCom? Well, there are signs this is different. It's not often you see certain forms of trading actually banned, as is now the case with short selling of some 800 companies. It is illegal for the moment. By the way, there is already talk that short sellers will sue. And this may just be the beginning. Marketplace's John Dimsdale tells us Washington, as usual, is not short of ideas for new regulations.
Former SEC Chairman Harvey Pitt says back in 1999, when Congress deregulated banks, brokerages, and insurance companies, it didn't come up with rules for some exotic new financial transactions.
Like certain derivatives and credit default swaps, et cetera, were left uncovered by any particular agency.
As a result, reform advocates say huge debts are hidden from regulatory oversight that now threaten the entire banking system. Bill Singer, a regulatory attorney on Wall Street, says it's time for full disclosure.
And if the regulators don't understand what's going on, then they either have to shut that business down or they have to warn us, like a smoke detector, that there's danger.
But Fed historian Alan Meltzer worries that tough new restrictions could chase banks overseas.
With all its problems, it's a very successful industry, and it finances the remarkable venture capital industry in the United States. We don't want to lose that.
Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama said today that to be effective, new rules will need to be global.
So we're going to have to update for the 21st century the same kinds of regulations that we put in place for the 20th century.
And Republican John McCain advocated smarter regulation.
We don't need a dozen federal agencies doing the job badly. We need the best federal agencies to do the job right.
But with an election looming, details will have to wait. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Much of the rescue plan we've been talking about involves complicated financial assets owned by banks and institutions. But here's where the government's efforts could directly affect you. On top of everything else, the Treasury Department announced today that it is setting aside up to $50 billion to protect investors in money market mutual funds. They've long been considered virtually as safe as cash, but as we learned this week, they're not. Marketplace's Amy Scott has that story.
Investors got a real scare earlier this week when the country's oldest money market mutual fund dipped below a dollar a share. It's known as breaking the buck, and in the nearly 40-year history of money market funds, it had only happened once before. Peter Crane tracks money market funds for Crane Data. He says the Reserve Primary Fund lost money on the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. Investors started pulling their money out of funds that had nothing to do with Lehman.
Investors basically took a look and said, are other funds at risk? What was just a Lehman problem, and some worries over AIG and WAMU, quickly spread into a mini panic.
The panic led Putnam Investments to close its prime money market fund yesterday. Today, the U.S. government stepped in. The Federal Reserve said it would lend more money to keep the market liquid, and the Treasury said it will insure some $2 trillion in money market fund assets for a year. Joff Bobroff is a consultant to the mutual fund industry. He says he's not sure a year will be enough.
I think it's enough to calm people down now. The question really is, how long does this crisis continue? And I don't know that we have an answer for that.
The insurance plan arrives too late for investors in the Reserve Primary Fund. But Crane Data's Peter Crane notes they lost just 3 cents on the dollar. Investors have lost more than that on inflation this year. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
One of the rules of roller coaster riding is to hang on to anything that could go flying out while you're upside down, including your wallet. No different with this week's stock market, even if you're not involved in Wall Street's day-in, day-out nuttiness. But we wondered whether today's actions made people generally, feel better after all the screaming headlines and doom and gloom of the last few days. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman went to find out.
Most of the people I talk to are worried about what all the financial turmoil will mean for the economy down the road. For now, they're watching and waiting to see if the latest government moves will stabilize things.
I suppose people think it's going to make it better.
Ruth Parnell is 64, a landscape architect in western Massachusetts.
I really don't know, but it makes me angry that they're doing it at all. Angry because banks that were deregulated and behaved badly and with extremely poor judgment and a lot of greed are now in trouble, and the taxpayers are footing the bill.
Parnell would just as soon see these banks and brokerages fail. Still, her own investments have taken a hit, and she'd like them to rebound before she retires. Owen Leiser doesn't have any investments, so he doesn't feel personally endangered. He's a graduate student at Arizona State University in Tempe.
I don't like the idea of taxpayers bailing out every single bank that is going to go under. But yeah, I think that from time to time, the government has a responsibility to keep things afloat and keep things moving.
Josh Ellison, on the other hand, has had investment setbacks in the past. He's 57, an IT worker in Portland, Oregon.
You wonder at the end of the day, will this really do it? I think we've been shaken in our confidence of the experts a bit.
Ellison wants to see at least a few weeks without huge ups and downs on the market before he's ready to invest again. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We'd like to hear more of your thoughts and concerns about the financial crisis. Post your comments on our website. It's marketplace.org. If you're thinking this week's meltdown calls for some perspective, yeah, it does. So our own Bob Moon, senior business correspondent, is here to provide some. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Tess.
So the stock market rallied today. Clearly, investors very relieved by today's news. But can we all breathe easier now or not?
Well, if anybody tells you the worst is over, you can believe them if you want to. But I would counsel you not to let your guard down just yet. Obviously, today's move is intended to convince us to relax, to boost confidence in the system. But the truth is, we've never really seen anything quite like this past week or the past year, for that matter. I saw a quote from a financial planner that I found very telling this week. In a normal market, your broker might be telling you to get into the market when the values have dropped so low. It's a buying opportunity.
Yeah.
But as I say, this really is different than we've seen in the past. You can't really call this a normal market correction. And this financial planner was cautioning his clients to wait and see before they jump back into the market, let things calm down just a bit more.
What makes this market volatility different?
Well, none other than Alan Greenspan, the Oracle, has called this a once-in-a-century financial event. Let me take you back to the last big market crash in 1987. Mm-hmm. A lot of analysts will tell you that that was a much-needed correction. That market had become way overvalued. Well, that was the same for the dot-com bust, but in this case, a lot of market watchers are calling this really a paradigm shift for the whole financial landscape.
Wow. You know, I have to say, Bob, this has been a blur of a week. And I wonder if it would help to kind of recap all that we've seen just in a matter of days.
Yeah, it seems like ages ago, but it was only the beginning of this week that we saw the fourth biggest investment bank in the country, Lehman Brothers, go belly up. And simultaneously, Merrill Lynch essentially was forced into a shotgun marriage with Bank of America. Then Tuesday, the world's biggest insurance company, AIG, looked ready to topple. The government rushes in with a taxpayer bailout plan. Then the surviving two investment banks, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, they gave us a bit of a breather. They reported better than expected earnings. And then this headline pops up in the New York Times that money market funds could be at risk. Well, that news starts spreading. All of a sudden, it's not just Wall Street that's in jeopardy.
Yeah, no, Main Street investors are all of a sudden very involved in this.
That's right. And the fact of the matter is this may look like a Wall Street bailout, but it's aimed squarely at Main Street. In fact, give a listen to House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi talking about this latest action.
Our purpose is to insulate Main Street from Wall Street and recognize our responsibility to the taxpayer, to the consumer.
Isn't Main Street the taxpayer?
Absolutely. And that's really the trillion-dollar question here. How do you insulate Main Street at the same time you're putting all that taxpayer money at risk?
Right.
You look back to the Japanese banking crisis that developed in the 1990s. You had similar problems, albeit on a relatively smaller scale, a slumping property market, brokerage collapses. And there are experts who've looked back at that, and they say it was the failure to just take the hit and move on that caused that crisis to linger on for almost the entire past decade in Japan. So does this action today boldly address the problem, or does it just put it in toxic storage, so to speak? More trouble later. Who knows?
And on that cheery note, thanks so much, Bob.
Thanks, Tess.
Coming up, community colleges squeeze their acceptance rates.
Looks like this year we had 204 qualified applicants for 40 seats in the fall.
But first, let's do those numbers. It may have felt like a month, but it was only a week, an historic week. The Dow rocketed up 3.33% today, 368 points to close at 11,388. The Nasdaq shot up 3.4%, 74 points to finish at 2,273. The S&P packed on 48 points, 4% to close at 1,255. As wild as it seemed, the Dow lost just 0.3% since Monday when we had that 500-point crash. And believe it or not, the NASDAQ actually picked up 0.6% this week. The S&P managed a gain of 0.1%. Financials soared for a change on the federal government's new fix-it strategy. B of A surged more than 22%, Morgan Stanley 20%, Citigroup 24%. And when you're Washington Mutual, adding just $1.25 translates into a surge of more than 42%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Areva, solutions for producing CO2-free energy and transmitting and distributing electricity. Online at us.areva.com. By Cleveland Clinic, working to redefine healthcare and the patient experience with the new Miller Family Pavilion and Glickman Tower. More at meetthebuildings.com. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a glance at events coming up Monday. The Consumer Federation of America releases a report on the differences in car loan rates received by Hispanics compared to the general population. Grid Week 2008 kicks off in D.C. Conference goers will trade bright ideas about new electricity systems. And the U.S. Mint honors Abraham Lincoln's bicentennial by releasing pennies with four new designs. I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Over the past few weeks, you may have found yourself with many headaches, as I did, trying to understand credit default swaps or mortgage-backed securities. Writer and commentator Stephen Baker has been trying to wrap his mind around a different set of mathematical innovations for pretty personal reasons. He wants to push his blog to the top of the Google rankings, and he says he's learned a lot in the process.
A woman came into my office last week. She's an expert on what's called search engine optimization. In other words, she helps people adjust their websites by putting in just the right words in the right places so that they'll rise to the top of search results on Google. This is important because if you or your business shows up on the third or fourth page of Google, you might as well not exist. No one finds you. She had some bad news for me. The headlines on my blog are terrible for Google. They have jokes in them, irony, references to things that only humans can understand. If I want to get a good Google ranking, I'll first have to make my case and establish my relevance to a machine. I thought about this. In industry after industry, we're being understood and ranked by our data. If the machines cannot find us, the humans never will. Those who figure out best how to organize their data will pop to the top of all kinds of lists. They'll be the first name you see in online dating. They'll be the first choice for the promotion to the Paris office. They may even be the first dog trainer you come across. For centuries, we developed all kinds of tricks to make ourselves stand out. A whiff of cologne, a firm handshake, a letter of recommendation, a resume with just the right font. That was how we made ourselves findable in the analog age. But now we live in a world defined largely by data, so we have to read the minds of the people who tell the machines what to look for. I call them the numerati. We have to decode their instructions, or algorithms, and then give them what they're after. This type of analysis is going to become the norm in a world managed by the numerati. If we need any help, you can bet that an entire consulting industry will rise up to help us make our case to machines and hone our own algorithms.
Stephen Baker is the author of The Numerati. He's also a senior writer for Business Week magazine. Enumerate your thoughts for us. Go to marketplace.org and click on contact. Earlier this week, GM unveiled its new plug-in hybrid, the Volt. It's at least a couple of years before you can actually buy one. Today, Chrysler said that next week, dealers will get a peek at plans for its new electric vehicle. Carmakers are feeling the pressure to change, and so are their workers. Many of them are turning to community colleges to train for new jobs. As Dustin Dwyer reports from Michigan Radio, schools are having a tough time keeping up with demand.
Jeff Pratt got out early. In December 2006, he decided it was time to leave his job at a Ford plant near Detroit. The company was cutting thousands of jobs, and Pratt worried he might be asked to transfer out of state. He opted to take a buyout and pursue a new career. Pratt enrolled at nearby Monroe County Community College to study to be a nurse.
It's a good job that's guaranteed. They're not downsizing anywhere for nurses, and there's a shortage right now. So it's an in-demand place where we can live where we want to, and there's no fear of having to relocate.
Michigan has been losing jobs, mostly in manufacturing, for seven straight years. But healthcare has been one of the bright spots. The sector's been growing so fast, hospitals can't find nurses fast enough. Plenty of people want to do the job, but there's a problem.
We don't have the resources to accommodate them.
Dawn Wetmore directs the nursing program at Monroe County Community College. She says a number of former auto workers like Pratt have turned to nursing. Wetmore flips through some papers to see how many would-be nurses applied for training this year.
It looks like this year we had 204 qualified applicants for 40 seats in the fall.
That's an acceptance rate of less than 20%. If this were a four-year undergraduate program, U.S. News & World Report would rank it the 27th most competitive in the nation, higher than Georgetown or Duke. But the nursing program at Monroe County Community College isn't trying to maintain an elite status. The school simply can't afford to admit any more students. Administrators say it costs about $400 per credit hour to educate a nurse at the school. Student tuition covers just 19% of that. The rest comes from the county, state, and federal governments. And those funds aren't flowing like they used to.
This is one of the great dilemmas that community colleges face.
George Boggs is head of the American Association of Community Colleges. He says the squeeze is no surprise because states, which are responsible for much of the funding for community colleges, usually do a terrible job preparing for bad economic times.
If revenues are up, they give tax cuts and spend the money. And then when revenues go down, they don't have the money to see them through the bad times.
So Boggs says even as community colleges face increased applications and Michigan employers beg for retrained workers, the schools have to cut back. Monroe County Community College is actually one of the lucky schools. It will hire a new nursing instructor starting next semester. That means more students can be accepted. But the only reason the nursing program will get a new instructor is because another department at the college is losing one. I'm Dustin Dwyer for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to helping Americans save on gas and become energy independent at publictransportation.org. And by Putnam Investments, where a 529 plan can help meet your college savings goals. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, for those of you who for some reason are not Red Sox fans, this weekend will be a time to mourn the loss of the home of the Bronx Bombers. Yankee Stadium will host the final games for its storied franchise. It was built in 1923 and hosted 37 World Series. The boys in pinstripes will play the Baltimore Orioles with the echoes of 85 years of cracks of the bat surrounding them. Demolition starts at the end of the season, which this year, it appears, will come unseasonably early for the Yankees. Aww. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 368 points, 3.3%. The NASDAQ added 74 points, 3.4%. And the S&P 500 gained 48 points, 4%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, when a bachelor's degree isn't enough.
Close to 3 in 4 college students indicate that they'll have a difficult time finding a job after graduation, but that's only one of their economic concerns.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.
world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.